This week, thousands of people from around the world are meeting in Egypt to participate in a march to the Palestinian border at Rafah, where aid trucks have been unable to cross into Gaza. The current war in Gaza began in October 2023, following a Hamas attack that killed almost 1,200 people in Israel, which itself came in the context of a decades-long conflict between Israel and Palestine. Since then, according to estimates, over 50,000 Gazans have been killed, over 100,000 injured, and many more displaced, in what has been described as a genocide by South Africa, a United Nations Special Committee, and Amnesty International, alongside other human rights organisations. One of the participants in the march is University of New Brunswick professor Jeff Houlihan. Local 107.3 FM spoke with Houlihan about the global march to Gaza and its aims, as well as what he expects to experience and his reasons for participating.
You know, I was watching the students protesting on the campuses and just so admired what they were doing. Like, I felt like they're really the voices we should be listening to, but looking at it and feeling like I was laying on my couch while these kids are out here doing this, and felt like I just couldn't do that anymore. And so started a little encampment at the University of New Brunswick at St. John. The march itself, you know, it was maybe 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago that I signed up to go. And at that point, I think there was seven or eight of us. Now it's, I think, I don't know, 86 or 87 people from Canada. And we're at 55 countries, I think, and we're looking at probably 3,000 or 4,000 people. And just to see that kind of progression has just been a bit mind-blowing. We'll fly out tomorrow and get into Cairo on Thursday. And then we're taking buses to El Arish, which is a small town kind of towards the Mediterranean, about 50 kilometers from Rafah. And we will then start marching from El Arish to Rafah. We expect that'll take 2 or 2.5 days. So we should hit Rafah around the 15th, around June 15th. You know, because we do occasionally get this question of, you know, why Egypt? Like, why are you protesting there? And it's because it's at that border in Rafah, the border between Egypt and Gaza, where the trucks are piling up. You know, you've got people around the world that are donating money to Red Crescent and Red Cross, and all of that money is being used to buy food and medical aid that is now sitting rotting at the border. It's spoiling at the border. We want to bring attention directly to this issue of starving the people of Gaza. And the question of feed the children of Gaza versus to starve the children of Gaza is not a political one. It's a question of right and wrong. And if we are in a place where we believe that that is a political question, then we've completely lost our way.
One of the other things I did want to ask were kind of what were the main aims of the march? What are the hopes of the organizers, I suppose?
Yeah, you know, because there's no doubt that if that's all that happens, if we go there, the 3,000 or 4,000 of us, we do this and we come home, it's going to get lost in the noise. Like, it's not going to be, it really needs to be amplified at home. The analogy for me is that the marchers are the first bucket in the fire brigade. We're the first bucket, but that bucket has to be passed many, many times to many, many people back in our home countries, one to the next. And that's what we need to amplify what we're doing there. And if it doesn't get amplified, if this doesn't turn into people talking to their MLAs and their MPPs and their MPs and Mark Carney and their mayors, if it doesn't turn into that, that kind of pressure on our political leaders to do something, then it won't matter very much. But if it can do that, it can matter a lot. And today we've actually seen Canada join the UK and Australia and New Zealand and Norway in putting sanctions on two high-ranking Israeli ministers, actually freezing their accounts and putting travel bans on them. And this is, to me, a first step. We're actually seeing action rather than just threats of action.
And could you tell me a little bit about who is actually organizing the march and kind of like who are the people who are participating?
Yeah, and in some ways this is hard to do because there is no kind of overarching institutional body that's driving this. In each of our countries, I think we've got maybe organizations that are playing lead roles. In Canada, it's an organization called Palestine Vivre out of Montreal. So it really is, it feels like from the ground up.
What are you likely to face in Egypt? What are you kind of expecting?
One of the things that really attracted me right from the beginning is that, one, there is a real commitment that this has got to be peaceful. And, they were actually very careful. Everybody that's going on the march had to submit an application and references, and they would phone just to make sure, have we got anybody that might be disruptive here? We need people that are going to be peaceful, that are going to be disciplined, that are coming for the right reasons. And then the other thing was that they've been going through all the channels. Every delegation from every country is meeting with the Egyptian embassy for their country. And I would say that the response generally has been positive. I would say our objective, which is, to get humanitarian aid across to Gaza, is well aligned with what Egypt would want as well. But that's a complex political world, and there are going to be conflicting views on this. But I would say right now we're feeling like the response from Egypt has been positive, and we see this as, allowing us to do this will be a win-win for them and for us. So we're fairly optimistic, but it's hard to know.
And so, I mean, I think, I guess this does get to kind of like more political, or the questions that kind of draw us back here to Canada. Is there anything you would want to say about what our government should be doing, what the Canadian government should be doing?
Yes, we would want divestment. We would want economic sanctions. We would want, to break off the free trade deal we have with Israel while we're doing this. We would want them to actually sign on to the South African complaint to the International Court of Justice that there's a genocide happening there. And so those are some of the things that we would like to see the government do. And, I think those are things that we've seen historically turn things around in a place like South Africa and could potentially here as well. Now, it's a very different situation. I don't mean to imply that South Africa and Israel were analogous, but it does appear that those kinds of sanctions can create change.
What is it there that people, ordinary St. John's, ordinary people from this part of the world can do?
Yeah, it's funny because, I think people automatically go to a place of, is there a place I can donate money? Money is often the solution to many of the concerns. Here, I actually think it's not money. It's amplifying these voices demanding change from Israel. And that, so then it is to me, emailing your MP, phoning your MP, taking part in protests. If you put 1,000 or 2,000 or 5,000 or 10,000 people in the street, this makes a difference. And so it really is raising your voice, however that can be done. And I've been talking to my mom about this. She's 90. And, I would not say a political person particularly. She's phoning her MP, she's emailing her MP. It's probably the first time in her life she's done that. And this is really what we need, people to do the thing that they probably wouldn't normally do, because what's happening right now is not normal. People are going to have to do something more here if we're going to change this. I think the only thing that makes it possible to defend what Israel is doing is to imagine that Palestinians are somehow less than human, and they stand and watch their children as they sleep, the same way we do. And all they want to be able to do is feed them in the morning. And that's, all we're trying to hope we can, help happen here.
More information about the march can be found at marchtogaza.net. This is Iona Coe for Local 107.3 FM and the Local Journalism Initiative.